welcome to Eastlake. I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. It's good for you to be here. It makes a big difference when you come on the weekend, so thanks. Thanks if you're online watching. This is your church, too, so thanks for checking us out. Grab your outline. So we're in this series called Boundaries, and today we're going to talk about friends. And it is true that women and men have way different boundaries in the way their friendships are. And you know, when we talk about boundaries, it's sort of like watching someone with their yards at their house. I mean, homeowners always have boundaries. So I'm running this week, you know, I'm running around the neighborhood, I'm on my run, and I come up like down the sidewalk and I see these two houses sitting side by side, and the one guy, he sort of believes in the au naturel yard, you know, he's like, lawn going everywhere and nothing's trimmed, and he's just like, you know, he's enjoying like watching TV in the house, you know, but the other guy, he's Mr. like, my lawn represents who I am and it's all nice and clean and everything. But you noticed when he mowed his yard, it came right up to the property line, and I mean, not a milli-inch more. It was perfectly mowed right down the side. So you got this guy's lawn just kind of flopping over a little bit, but this guy's was just right up to it. And I ran by, I thought, you know what? He knows exactly how far he has to mow. Now, if I was the other guy, I'd be like messing with his line all the time. You know, I'd be like out with my mower screwing it up, you know, but this guy just perfectly lined like that. And that's what physical boundaries do. They tell me like where my yard ends and your yard begins. And that's how boundaries work in friendships. It tells me, like, what's my life and what's your life? What's my responsibilities and what's your responsibilities? And also it provides clarity because, you know, you could just see he wasn't going one inch past his yard to take care of this other guy's yard. He's very clear. And I wanted to ask the question, when is the last time you had problems in a friendship and it all started with a misunderstanding? I mean, just a simple misunderstanding is people that you like, they're your friends, and there's this misunderstanding that turns into a fight. And then just like it's bigger and bigger, and the fight's more and more, and then people get stubborn, and the next thing you know, the friendship is never the same. And it's all because of a lack of clarity. And so in friendships, when you have boundaries, when you have markers, when you know, hey, this is my life and this is your life, and these are my responsibilities, and these are your responsibilities, it helps us stay clear. And one of the things that clarity does, it helps us sort of know, well, how do we love each other in our friendships? And it's the big idea this weekend. You can write in your notes, boundaries clarify how to love my friends. And by the way, a boundary is not a wall. Okay, so a wall is something that I make in my life that I live behind, I stay safe, and it protects only me. A boundary protects me and my friend. That's what a boundary does. Because sometimes, remember we talked about a boundary sort of like being at a border of a country. And anytime you come to a border, you know, there's somebody in authority there that has to let you in. And there's somebody in authority that has to let you out. And so that's what a border, you come to a border and you have to, you like, give some identification to get in and out. And that's what a boundary does in our lives. And it's very dangerous to it's very dangerous to get your way in life when you're not supposed to. I just want to ask the question, when's the last time you cried and moped and whined or manipulated and you got your way? But later you regretted it. Because there was a border there was a boundary, and somebody let you pass on through that shouldn't have, and maybe they were even your friend, let you pass on through that shouldn't have, and you got your way, and then later on you regretted it. You're like, because listen, we all need times in our life where somebody says, no, you don't get to do that. And they can tolerate our whining and our complaining. Oh, if you were a better friend. And like, they can tolerate that because they know that sometimes when you really love someone, you have to say no. Jeff Dow Judas. In my high school, like he was the stuff, man. And he was kind of my friend, but not a really great friend. We played sports together. I knew Jeff. I knew his sister. And Jeff was this guy that he was the person that introduced me into smoking weed. And so, you know, Jeff found out one day that I'd never smoked weed, and so he said, "Oh man, tomorrow you're going to be smoking weed." And I said, "Well, I'm not going to do that. I don't even have any weed." He goes, "Well, I'm going to pick you up." So he comes by my house. He comes roaring by in this really cool truck, which I had no car. And you know, you know when you sort of have a sense, don't get in that car. You know, well, I got in the car, And before I know it, he's passing the joint along. And no one ever really told me about what weed would do to you. I mean, you know, and I'm on my way to school. And his sister's in there, and the joint's going back and forth. And you don't want to look like a complete idiot at that moment. You know, you kind of want to act like you know what you're doing. But, I mean, you guys have probably never gone through this. And so, oh, by the way, I do have a past. And so if you're thinking I'm squeaky clean from my past, you're wrong. And so, you know, when the joint comes by me, I'm kind of watching them to see what they do with the joint. You know, and they're like, I thought, wow, is it really hard to get it into you or something? You know, so the joint comes to me, and I'm like, and I mean, I just start coughing and embarrassing myself. And it was the best English class I'd ever had, first period. But here's the thing. The friendships that we have in our life, do you know the best thing that could have happened to Jeff was for me to say no? Because Jeff was this really, influential person in our high school. He had this bigger-than-life personality, this magnetic personality, and he used that to take a ton of people towards a lifestyle that hurt them, because none of us wanted to say no. The best thing that could have happened to Jeff is said, are you crazy? I got to go to school tomorrow. No. But I didn't. So it just kept him living a certain way. And here's what Jeff began to believe. Whenever I tell anybody to do anything, they'll do it. How do you think that showed up in marriage years later? Or with your children? Or with your boss? So here's the point. Sometimes you have to hit somebody else's boundary. And sometimes to be a great friend, when somebody hits your boundary, you need to be able to say no. And it's the best thing for them. Now look how it says in the Bible, this part here, greater love has no one than this, that they lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. And so it's Jesus talking, and he's saying that boundaries help us know how to lay our life down. What they do is they let us know, how much am I supposed to sacrifice? How far am I supposed to go? And we determine our boundaries. Nobody else determines those. You get to decide. You're the authority. You get to decide where your boundaries are going to be with your friends. That's your call. You decide that. So the question is, how do you set them that's a benefit both for yourself and other people, for them, your friends? And Jesus had boundaries, by the way. I mean, he still does. I mean, Jesus has boundaries. I know people think of him as like this guy that walked around with a white toga that had this like really cool hair and looked like some butt rock singer in the 80s. But actually, Jesus was a person, and he still is like having friendships with people, and he has boundaries. He has boundaries. He knows how to set boundaries in his friendships. And one of the things that happens to me sometimes let me ask this question. When's the last time you had a friendship and you felt like the other person put more into the friendship than you do? Which is kind of awkward. You know, like somebody really cares about you and they got your back and they're always like doing stuff for you and everything. And you just sort of feel like, gosh, you know, they seem to like me a lot more than I like them. You know, that uncomfortable feeling when someone really wants to be with you all the time and they love you and everything. And you just know that you don't quite feel the same way. Sometimes I get that way with God. It's like, I know he loves me, and I'm clear on that, I don't know for sure that I love him like he loves me. It's awkward. And that can cause you to pull away from someone when you feel like, well, they like me a lot more than they like me, so I'm going to get some distance from them. I mean, one of the things we do is we go to Jesus all the time and ask for help and forgive my sins, and it's great to experience his love, but another part is being able to experience my love for him. And so what's happening here in this idea of boundaries is Jesus makes this statement. He says, like, you know, greater has no one, you know, you keep my commands. Here's what he's saying. Jesus is saying, in my relationships, if you want to feel like you're my friend, if you want to feel like you love me, then you'll keep my commands. And I have noticed that before, that it's in my interest, because I'm all walking around like, me and God are good, we're good, and everything like that. But I know I'm doing stuff that he doesn't want me to, or I know I'm not doing stuff that he does want me to. So Jesus sets a boundary in the relationship, and here's the boundary. He says, listen, if you want to feel like you're my friend, if you want to think that you're my friend, if that's something you want to think you're my friend, what you'll have to do is keep my commands. So I did want to ask the question, if you know God loves me, but you've never experienced what it is to love God, which is almost as good. Because just think about your friendships. I mean, it's one thing to know someone loves you, but it's an entirely different thing to know that you love them. And if that's rocky for you, that might be rocky. Just ask yourself the question, is there anything that I know Jesus doesn't want me to do, and I'm doing it anyways? Because if it is, that might be why you're not experiencing a love for him. Because it's a boundary. And he sets it in our best interest. Okay? Now look at some things that can happen. Here's some questions on how to set boundaries. The first one is it compliance or compassion? And here's some part of the Bible to give it some credibility. The Lord is good to everyone and has compassion for everything that he has made. He's good and he responds with compassion. And here's the difference. Compliance is something that I do to make someone happy so I can feel okay. And it can be anybody. It's what I do. I decide I'm going to comply to something so to make them happy, a friend happy, so I can feel okay. It's completely different than compassion. Actually, compliance is about me. It's something that I do, and it might not look like it, but it's I do it because I want to feel okay. Compassion is about you. So here's how it works. So you got the, like we talked about, it's like a border. So you have a border, and you're the person sitting in the little checkpoint of your border. And here comes the emotion. And by the way, write this down. Every emotion becomes an action. So guess what? Whatever you're feeling in life, it's on its way to becoming a behavior, some sort of action. Okay? And so here it comes up to the border, and you're like, you're the person in the border, like if you've ever been to a border before. You're there, here you are right here, you're sitting in this like thing. And here comes the emotion right now. And at every border, like they have to check the identification, like what emotion is this? And one comes up, and you have to decide, is this compliance or is this compassion for someone? And here's how you figure it out. Ask yourself a simple question. Who's it about? That's the number one way you can figure it out. Who's going to benefit from it? Because if it's compliance, it means I'm doing it because of what I need. Compassion is what you need. So I'm at work this week, and these two dudes got in this big hassle over a sales thing. They both thought that they sold this thing and they should get the money. And it turns out to be a pretty big fight. You know how everybody is with a fight. Like, they all run, you know, they want to hear it and see what's going on. So everybody knows about it. One guy's this ginormous dude, this sort of a domineering personality and always trying to sort of like, I'm the big guy around here. The other dude's this really nice older man that doesn't push anybody around. And, you know, everybody's talking about it. And we've all decided, you know, that the nice dude, he's really in the right on this one. But the big dude just won't let up on it, man. That's my thing, and he's a effing thief, and he took $300 out of my pocket talking crap about everybody. And the other guy, he's like, no, man, I really think this is right. And finally, after about 3 days, he completely caves to the guy. He gives him the money. And so I saw him later, and I said, hey, well, what's up with that? Why did you, you know, he's a really super nice guy. I said, why'd you give him the money? I mean, it was so obvious that he was wrong. He's greedy. Why'd you give him that money? He goes, well, because I thought about it. And, he kept coming to me and bothering me about it and everything. And I told him, he came to me and I told him, I'm going to give you this money because I'm going to show you what kind of man I am. Now let me ask you a question. Who's that about? I'm going to show him what kind of man I am. And at first blush, I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, gosh, you're the bigger man. But then I realized, you didn't really give him that money because you cared about him. You gave him that money so you could feel good about your character. And that's compliance. And you'll always be able to figure it out. Now listen, you will always be able to figure out if you answer this question, who's it about? My friend Todd Murray, years and years ago, I used to call him Too Tall Todd Murray. He was 6'6", big, huge, tall guy. And we went to church together, and he was really great with children, great storyteller. He worked with all of our children and on some teams that I led. And Todd Murray, Todd was the gentlest guy. I really do think Todd was the gentlest, kindest man I've ever met. He was just this giant guy. And he came from a pretty tough situation. His dad had left his family. He had two younger brothers that were twins, and his mom was working her butt off to try to raise the family. And Todd was helping out, and they were doing a great job. And the kids turned out great. They hit this patch of road in life where they hardly had any money. It was just a stretch to make it at all. And Todd comes to me one time, and he's in a panic. And he calls me on the phone. He's in a panic. He said, you know, we just told we had to leave our house in a week. The landlord's selling our house, and he's telling us we have to leave in a week, and we don't know what we're going to find. We don't have any money like that. And I'm like, Todd, I got your back. I'll help you, man. He's like a really close friend of mine. Well, the very next day, our senior pastor gets all the staff together. He's teaching on leadership. He says, listen, I want to give you guys a leadership principle. He says, you know what? Some of you, you spend a lot of your time with broken people. And people that aren't, I mean, that's okay, but you, if you want to be a great leader, you got to start spending time with the mover and shakers, with the influencers, the people that are going somewhere. And of course, I'm sitting in my chair and I'm thinking of Todd Murray and all my other friends. I'm like, oh, man. He's going, you're never going to be a great leader if you spend all your time with people that are hurting and broken and need help. So I left that meeting and I thought, whew, I got some changes to make. I mean, I'm always hanging around people that need help, and I need help, you know. So here comes Todd now, you know, desperate in his life. Robin, he goes, we found a place. We found another house we can move into. But I don't have enough. I need a credit card. Nobody has a credit card. I need a credit card to be able to rent a truck. We can pay for it, but I can't rent a truck without a credit card. Could I use your credit card? And I'm hearing the senior pastor in my ear. You need to not be with broken people so much. You need to start hanging around people that are, you know, going somewhere in life. And, you know, I'm on the phone to Todd, you know, Mr. like the poster boy for broken family. And I'm like, well, Todd, that's a lot to ask, man. It's my credit card. And he's like, Robin, you don't understand. You know, I'm coming right over. And I'm like, Todd, don't come. And he's like on his way. So here comes Todd into my office. Comes walking in, Big Todd. He goes, it worked out perfect. Everything's going to work out. And my mom looks like she's going to be okay. And my brothers aren't scared anymore. And we're going to pull the whole thing off. All I just need is your credit card. He assumes he's going to get it because that's how we've always lived together. And I'm like, well, Todd. And I can hear my senior pastor, like, dump the losers, man. If you're going to be a great leader, you know. And it's just pressing me. And I really want to do the right thing. You know, it's like, but what is the right thing? And then I said, Todd, well, gosh, dude, it's my credit card, you know, and I'm just torn. And then Todd said this to me. He said, Robin, if I've ever needed you, I need you now. And man, my heart just came up. And that, he became so much larger in my life. But I really was at a crossroads. Was I going to comply or was I going to have compassion? And it was like I was at the border at that moment. It's like, oh, it looks like I'm going to have to, you know. And I just, man, I got my credit card. I said, here, man. I said, go get the, and as he was leaving, I said, listen, I'll catch the truck, too, because I know you guys are tired. It's like, no big, just go. You know what I mean? You're going to, and that really was the crossroads for me. Because one person in my life that I really wanted to please said, don't be like that way. And then there was the person in need. And if you'll stop in your life, and when something comes up to your border, and if you'll sit in that, and you'll just think and say, am I complying just so I can be okay in their eyes? Or is this compassion because I really love this person? You'll always figure it out. Now, here's the way to set a boundary so it's visible. Like, this is how you set a boundary. The first thing you ask yourself is this. Who in my life do I feel like I have to comply to? And just make a list. Like, just write it in your notes somewhere. It's not on there. But, I mean, it's like a good question. Who do I feel like I have to comply to? Who is it? You know, the problem with compliance, too, is that when you comply to someone, you comply to them, they really think that you care about them. I mean, that's what's in there. They think you care about them. And pretty soon you feel trapped in the relationship because you just keep complying, And pretty soon now you just feel trapped like, crap, I'm always doing stuff for them that I really don't want to do. So then you get angry and you like them less and less. And pretty soon you don't even hardly care about them. And listen, compliance will actually kill compassion. You may do stuff for somebody all the time, but it just kills it because you're so mad that you got trapped into doing it again and you don't even really care about them anymore. And it just kills it. So the first thing to ask yourself is, like, who do I feel like I have to comply to? And then here's the next one. You have to prepare for their reaction. Because, listen, do you think that, like, that senior pastor that taught that, I mean, how do you, that, like, affected our relationship? When you don't comply to people any longer, it pisses them off. And they get angry. and you have to be prepared for their response. I had a boss one time that was manic depressant. And so he'd swing back and forth, but primarily he was manic all the time. So this dude was like a high-energy person. So he could like show up at work at 5:30 in the morning and work until 7 at night every single day. What was so crazy is we didn't know that he had this condition when we all worked with him. We just thought he was a really hard worker. So we're trying to keep up. We're normal people. And he's burning us all out. And he keeps lopping the work on us and just putting more work on us. And everybody starts bailing, and I'm like, I'm not going to bail, man. I'm going to like hang right in there. I mean, I'm going to hang in with this thing. So here's what you have to ask yourself the question sometimes is, what is it I think I'm going to lose if I don't come caught? Because I figured it out. I was so afraid that at some point he was going to replace me. And you'll have to face that with people that you feel like you're complying to. This one dude's dad controlled the money in the family. He was very, very wealthy. He controlled the whole family with his money. And even when the kids got older, this guy's got married and a family. And this dad would be like, oh, I'll catch it. And gave him season's tickets and, bought this house for him to all stay in, paid for vacations for everybody to go on. Well, as the guy got older, his wife is everything. Well, I don't want to go on vacation with dad this time. Let's do something different. Hey, dad, we're gonna do something different this holiday. You're going to what? It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, we always do this. Yeah, but, my wife and the kids, they want to do something different. He said, okay. So then he noticed he didn't get his season's tickets that year. And then his other brothers and sisters, this guy is like lavishing them with gifts. I mean, he's not getting anything. And his dad is sending a subtle message to him through money because there's a reaction coming, right? Because he's not complying anymore. He's sending a message to him. And I wanted to ask the question, who's sending messages to you? Comply with me or you will pay a price. So he's sending messages, and pretty soon, you know what he did? He changed his will. And he told him. Who in your life is going to make you pay a price if you stop complying? You need to know that and how you're going to respond. And then here's the last thing. Respond with some limits. Decide like what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do. And then don't explain yourself. Don't argue. Don't owe an explanation. Just say, hey, this is what works for me now. See how they respond. So here's the second thing. On your notes, look on the other side. Is this an obligation or a commitment? And let me read something to you. The Lord says, I hate your religious festivals. I cannot stand them. So everybody believes that God lives up on a little white cloud and he's just like a wussy. Listen to this right here. The Lord says, I hate your religious festivals. I cannot stand them. When you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. I will not accept the animals you fatten to bring me as offerings. Stop your noisy songs. I do not want to listen to your harps. Instead, let justice flow like a stream and righteousness like a river that never goes dry. Stop your noisy songs. I don't want to hear your harp. So it's a pretty big deal when God tells you to stop singing. When God says, stop worshiping me. It's like, are you the God I heard about in Sunday school? I was like, He's like, stop worshiping me. Here's why. Because he knew they weren't worshiping. They were just going through the motions. And, I mean, you can go through the motions when you feel like you're just in obligation to someone. So let me ask the question, who do you feel like you're obligated to? Or here's one. Here's a good question. Who makes you feel like an obligation? Is that the worst? It's like you just want to say, I'm not a charity case. And that's kind of what God is saying here. He's like saying, I'm not a charity case. You think I need your songs? You're not going to treat me like an obligation. So I just wanted to ask the question, in your relationship with your friendships, you've got to be able to set boundaries so no one treats you like an obligation and you don't cause anybody else to feel like an obligation. There's a huge difference between an obligation and a commitment. An obligation is about me, and there it is again. You can figure out so many things in life if you just ask yourself a simple question, who is it about? Because an obligation will always be about me because I'm trying to avoid something, but a commitment is about you. And there's this story about this guy named Boswell who wrote a biography about Samuel Johnson way back in the day. I mean, it's ancient history. But the big deal about him was, I mean, now we see biographies and stories about people on TV. It's a big deal. But he was like the first one to ever write one that was really good. So he wrote about this guy, and everybody's like, dang, this is cool to read about people's lives. So he was like the very first one. Well, listen now. Years later, someone finds this guy, Boswell, finds his dad's journal, like his diary. I don't know if a guy keeps a diary, but I guess this guy was sort of that way, kept a diary. So anyway, so he's got a diary, right? And they're reading through it one day, and as this guy knows Boswell, and he was talking to him years later, and the guy had said one day that his dad had taken him fishing. And they got to go fishing together, and he thought it was really cool. And he's reading in this guy's journal, and he turns to it, and he comes to the day where the guy talks about the fishing trip. And there's one line there. It says, took my son fishing today, a wasted day. And you're like, and do you know that when you get caught in a friendship that's filled with obligation, all the real love and care just seeps away. You just do the duty, the drudgery of duty. There's no care in it anymore. There's no love in it anymore. There's just, I did what I was supposed to do. So you have to set a boundary. Now here's a boundary to ask yourself. The question is, who do I feel obligated to? I mean, that's the way you figure it out. If you're going to set a boundary in your life, who do I feel obligated to? And then the question is, what am I trying to avoid? And then you try to figure out how you're going to respond to them. An obligation. So this idea of switching from an obligation to a promise. A promise is something that connects me to you. A promise is always about you. It means I'm willing to do something because I care about you, and someone has the right to expect something when you make a promise to them. And so one of the switches you make from an obligation is you switch to a promise, because a promise will make you think. And if you make a promise to someone, they really have a right to expect you to keep it, because you've said you're going to do something. And when you promise something to someone, it sort of causes you to connect with them in a caring way. And here's two things about promises. Two things about it. Number one, if you make a promise to someone and you can't keep it, you can always renegotiate because you care. And you can always go to them and say, hey, listen, I need to talk this through again. Or here's the other thing. Because every promise can turn into an obligation, you can go to God and ask him to change your heart. And there's this famous scene in the Bible with Jesus where his promise to go to the cross starts to turn into an obligation. And he's like, think about his life. I mean, you know, there's like a lot of markers he has to hit. And so he comes up to the time where he sees the cross coming, and it starts to feel like just an obligation. And you get there with your friends, right? You love them and everything. But can you come and help me move Saturday? You're like, oh, God. You know, it's like, I don't want to help you move. You know, can you loan me $20? You know, can you let me borrow your top or shirt or whatever you girls wear? And so anyways, you know, it's like that. And you're like, I don't want to do it, you know. And I don't know if you ever picture Jesus like that. Maybe you think he's all like, oh, like on a white horse, Mr. King. But Jesus is like a person. And he's like, sees the cross coming. He's like, I don't want to do it. He's like, but I know I have to do it. Have you been there in a friendship? Because he was there. He was like, I don't. You know, he probably thought, this is going to really hurt. And then I'm going to be separated from everybody. And maybe he even thought, oh, God, are you sure you're going to resurrect me? Because if you don't, this thing has a bad ending to this story. I mean, all that's going through his mind. He's like, I don't know if I want to do it. And so he goes and has to spend time with God to change his heart. And he goes to this garden called Gethsemane. And he has this conversation. And he literally, listen now, he tries to renegotiate the whole thing with God. The Bible says that the cross from the beginning of time was in the plan, and Jesus goes to the Father. This is how much gall he has. He goes to the Father and tries to renegotiate. Is there any way we could do this without the cross? And that's pretty crazy. That's like going to your boss and saying, is there any way I could get paid like for the rest of the year and not come to work? Would that be all right? You know, I mean, he actually said, is there, and you know, anytime God is quiet, he's trusting you. He's saying, well, just give it some thought. you know, your boss is really quiet sitting at his desk and you start thinking, oh, that was like a dumb thing to say. You know, it's like God's trusting you to come around like, oh, okay. He tries to renegotiate. And then he says, okay, well, if we can't change it, then I'm going to need a different heart. Because I don't want to feel like I'm just punching the clock when I'm dying on the cross. I don't want to look at everybody and say, I hope you appreciate this. It hurts like hell. But I'm doing my job. He wants his heart to be right. And when he leaves that conversation, his heart is right. You know the difference between a promise and an obligation? A promise will point me towards God anytime I don't want to do it. I just don't. It could be as simple as I don't want to come and help you move your stupid piano. And you can go to God and say, God, could you give me a right heart in this thing? And here's the good news. You can see it. Jesus is your friend too. So here's what he says. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. So that might just, we're just starting out as a church. And so it's a church for everybody, and kind of our simple message is you don't have to work to earn God's love. And so if you were to ask people to say to them, well, like, what are the different words that come to your mind when you hear the name Jesus? I wonder how many of your friends would say, my friend. There are probably a lot of different words that come to their mind, but like run away or something like that, but probably not my friend. But here he says it. I call you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit that will last. And here's what he's saying. And, you know, boundaries are basically choices. So we've been in this entire series, and you'll have to think through your friends, and you'll have to, like, make some choices, decide, because you're the authority. You're at the border of your life. Listen, you decide what comes into your life and what goes out of your life. It's your call. But you don't sit there alone. What Jesus is saying, I chose you to be with you. And I will be with you at the boundary of your life, and I'll help you make the decisions, because your life matters. I mean, he has a weird way of saying it. He says, you're going to be like bear fruit. And in his day, that'd make a lot of sense, because there was like agriculture everywhere. But here's all he was saying. He's saying, you're not going to live a life and at the end of the day go, wow, why did it matter? It's like you walk out to a fruit tree and you go, like one little apple off to the side. He's going to say, if you're with me, you'll bear fruit. You'll be able to, you'll experience life in a way you'll say, it does matter.